Welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. It's not likely you would know about it, but there's a good chance your license plate has been scanned by law enforcement in Utah. A recent request by the Drug Enforcement Administration to scan license plates on I-15 brought the issue into the limelight. Now the ACLU of Utah is raising privacy concerns and wants to know how the technology is being used. We'll learn more. Then with the Outdoor Retailer Summer Market in town, we'll sit down with Peter Metcalf of Black Diamond Equipment to discuss his criticism of Governor Gary Herbert's environmental and public lands policy. And we'll talk with Donna McAleer, the Army veteran and businesswoman who's the Democratic nominee to challenge Republican Congressman Rob Bishop in this year's election. Politics Up Close is coming up with your calls right after the news here on KCBW. Good morning and welcome to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Could law enforcement be tracking where you go with automatic license plate readers? That's the concern of the American Civil Liberties Union. This week, ACLU affiliates in 35 states, including Utah, sent requests for information to government agencies on how the technology is being deployed. And it's a timely issue in the Beehive State, where the Federal Drug Enforcement Administration wanted to install license plate readers on I-15 recently in southern Utah to catch drug smugglers. Joining me now in the studio to discuss the privacy concerns raised by this issue and this technology is John Mejia, Legal Director for the ACLU of Utah. John, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Listeners, join us on the air with your questions and comments. What's your opinion of automatic license plate readers? Does this technology go too far? Our number is 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. John, first of all, what is an automatic license plate reader?
An automatic license plate reader is a type of camera that's sometimes mounted on patrol cars and sometimes mounted on stationary objects like light poles or signs that allows law enforcement to take pictures of people's license plates as they go down the roads or are parked. It's very advanced technology that, you know, some of them are capable of taking up to 3,000 pictures in 1 minute.
Oh, wow. And what do law enforcement in general do with this technology? What do they say they want to do with it?
Well, you know, that's one of the problems that we're trying to address with our public records request. We're not exactly sure what they're doing with these readers. I mean, generally, they say that they are doing things that are more benign, like looking for stolen cars or looking for license plates of people who have warrants out for their arrests or, you know, if they've been given a tip of a car that is, you know, in committing a crime, that they would use it to go after those. But, you know, our concern is obviously that they may be using it for other purposes.
And, John, what do we know exactly about how this technology is being used here in Utah? I remember a recent article in the Salt Lake Tribune really made it sound like it is quite extensive.
Yes, we think it's fairly extensive. And, you know, as you mentioned, when we learned that the DEA was going to ask for permission to use one of these readers on the interstate highway, we were very concerned when the Beaver County Sheriff said that, you know, he named at least three police agencies that had already been employing them. And he named Ogden, the Utah Highway Patrol, and the Iron County Sheriffs. So we sent public record requests to all three of those agencies and heard from all three of them that they actually, two of them, the Highway Patrol and the Iron County Sheriff, said that they didn't own them. Hmm. Ogden does own one, and they're using them again. I mean, they weren't very explicit on how they were doing it, but they, you know, they have said it was for those more benign purposes.
As you mentioned, that recent request from the Drug Enforcement Administration was to install some of these in southern Utah. Tell us a little bit more about that request and eventually what happened with it.
Sure. So they were requesting to put two readers in along two stretches of I-15, one in Beaver County and one in Washington County. Their plan was to collect information about every car passing through those stretches and to collect those and keep them for 2 years at a database in Virginia. And, you know, their stated purpose was to track, you know, try to figure out whether there were drug runners going through there. Interestingly, our legislature was very skeptical of that request. I think that, you know, the concerns that you're raising seem to cut across sort of political affiliation, because I think, you know, we all share a concern about our privacy.
Tell me about the open records request, John, that the ACLU here in Utah and many affiliates across the country recently submitted to law enforcement agencies. Where are these requests going, and what is it you're really hoping to glean from them?
So, as you mentioned, there are about 38 state affiliates that have sent state public records requests to the state agencies that we believe are using these readers. I mean, one of the problems is that it's not exactly clear to us which state agencies own these readers. But to the extent that we've been able to figure out who owns them, we've sent along a records request that asks the rules for collecting, you know, what kind of data they're collecting, how long they're keeping it, the rules for who can use it, who can access it, why they can access it, what measures they're doing to keep the information private and safe. And so we've also actually made requests of the federal government, too. We believe that the Department of Justice, the Department of Homeland Security, and the Department of Transportation may be using these as well. So we have sent federal records requests to them.
This is Politics Up Close here on KCPW. I'm Jeff Robinson. We're talking with John Mejia, legal director for the ACLU of Utah, about the use of automatic license plate readers, the technology being used by law enforcement agencies here in Utah and across the country, with the ACLU recently submitting several records requests across the country to find out how this technology is being used. Join us on the air with your questions and comments about it at 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. John, let's specifically talk about, you know, the potential violations of the law or of the Constitution that this technology raises. What are your chief legal concerns about how this is being used?
Sure. So under our Constitution, the Fourth Amendment sort of gives us the right to be free of unreasonable searches by the government. And this technology sort of gives them the capability, at least, of collecting sort of vast information on our movements when we're in our car. It would be able to tell them, you know, where we were driving, when we were driving, and not just to have that sort of as a snapshot, but to be able to put together sort of a big picture about that. So if they're keeping records about, you know, who's been where over the last 2 years, you can sort of imagine that they have this vast database of innocent information that we're not exactly sure what they're doing with it.
And the right to privacy and the Fourth Amendment, of course, are open to interpretation by the courts. It's the court's role to determine exactly what constitutes an unreasonable search and seizure. There have been a number of cases over the years that have helped us determine this, and I believe it was just last year there was one even at the Supreme Court where they ruled that a use of, I think it was a tracking device on somebody's car, violated the Constitution. Tell us a bit about that.
So in that case, the DEA, I believe, had put on a tracking device onto a car and without a warrant, which I think was one of the, you know, key problems. I think with a warrant, it would have obviously been a different case. But they put a tracking device on a car and followed it around for 28 days and then tried to use some of that evidence in the case against the person they had, you know, caught them with some drugs. And the Supreme Court ruled that that evidence could not be used. The primary reasoning that they used was that by putting the device on the car, they had sort of invaded the person's property. The minority or the I guess it wasn't the dissent, but there was a concurring opinion that said, well, you know, we really should be using a standard that's called the reasonable expectation of privacy, and that, you know, no reasonable person would expect the government to sort of track their movements over 28 days without a warrant to do so.
This is Politics Up Close. Join us on the air at 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. And we happen to be joined on the line, actually, by Jim Winder, the sheriff of Salt Lake County. Hi, Sheriff Winder. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much for having me. Sorry to have to call in. I hope my line is clear enough.
Oh, you sound fine. Tell us about, you know, your concerns here about our guest and this technology.
Well, I'm thrilled you're having the discussion, of course, and I I can see the perception that might be left by the guest's comments about the collection of data and the misuse of that. I want to assure this guest, yourself, and members of the public, we in the Unified Police Department use these devices on a fairly frequent basis, and we do not maintain databases. They are used for investigative purposes, as he alluded to. I can give you several examples. Recently, we had a stolen car sting in which the vehicles were used to go through a variety of apartment complexes and essentially read the plates, and we recovered numerous stolen vehicles from that. We've also used them during Amber Alerts, where we've programmed in partial plates of potential suspects and placed them in strategic locations in hopes of identifying that vehicle. So to my knowledge, and I don't know of any local entity that is collecting data recovered from these devices. In fact, I know of no software that is currently available to us to allow us to do that. But I would offer this to your guests. If the ACLU, rather than submitting a records request, come to our office, sir, and we will demonstrate and discuss with you. But I think too often we get into these situations where we're responding to records requests rather than having conversations.
Well, Sheriff,
so I hope you take us up on that.
Sheriff, let me ask you real quick. Can you appreciate, though, the concerns raised by this issue, especially with the DEA wanting to install those readers down there in southern Utah and, as our guest said, store that information for 2 years? Can you appreciate those concerns?
I absolutely can, and I think that's where it's critical that we don't mix the metaphor. Local law enforcement here and again, I can speak only for our agency, no intention nor capability of recovering, retaining, and storing that information. And so I get the distinction. What I sense, though, in the conversation is that local legitimate uses are being somehow viewed through the lens of you know, the federal government's activities with those. We can't speak or control what they do. We can, however, be very transparent about what we're doing with them on the local level, and it's a very important technology.
And Sheriff Wender, while we still have you on the line, let me ask you real quick. I don't know if this is still tied up in the courts, but there was an issue a year or so ago about the use of cell phone tracking technology as well, which is kind of in the same vein about concerns over privacy. What's the status of that right now?
I'm embarrassed to say I don't know the status of that, and that is an issue that's a little more subtle because that technology, there are some different applications for that. This application or the utilization of this particular technology, from my standpoint, is very street level, mundane almost, and at the same time very effective. It's really a handy technology, and I sure hope that people don't come away with it as, you know, viewing it that it's being used in a nefarious way.
Salt Lake County Sheriff Jim Wender, thanks so much for calling in. You've added a lot to the discussion. Thank you.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. Well, back to ACLU of Utah Legal Director John Mejia. Well, John, what do you have to say about what the sheriff has to say there? Does what he has to say satisfy any of your concerns?
Well, you know, and I would be happy to take him up on his request and sort of learn more about how Salt Lake County is specifically using it. I mean, I don't think that our concern is with the uses that he's describing. I mean, we're not anti-technology in any way, and we don't want to sort of tie law enforcement's hands for those type of legitimate uses. Our concern is that, you know, we don't know. I mean, and you know, I think it's good that the sheriff has told us that there are sort of limits on how they use it and limits on their capabilities. But, you know, the reason that we sort of go into records requests is to make sure that these are sort of written procedures and that there sort of are rules and regulations put into place.
John, more broadly, in an age of increasing technology, so many people have smartphones and carry them with them at all times. Unlike, you know, your car, you can't take that everywhere. People pretty much always have a cell phone. What are the broader concerns about privacy in this information age and about the law as it relates to increasing use of technology?
Well, you know, our concern is that, you know, technology is much faster than the law. You know, as you said earlier, you know, courts are ultimately the arbiters of what is constitutional or not. And so it takes a long time for cases to wind through the courts. It takes a long time for courts to sort of get their arms around new technologies. You know, sometimes, you know, judges, you know, a lot of them are very up on the technology, but, you know, a lot of times it's hard for them to understand or find an analogy that sort of fits in our current common law. And so one of our goals, you know, nationally and here in Utah would be for us as a people to sort of get ahead of the courts on protecting our privacies because we don't, you know, the courts are slower. So there are, you know, already two states, for example, New Hampshire and Maine, that have statutory protections related to the use of license plate reader technologies. And, you know, so we want to get ahead of that. You know, courts set floors on, you know, the least, you know, protection that we can give. And our goal would be to be more protective of our privacy than the courts might allow.
This is Politics Up Close here on NPR Utah, KCPW. I'm Jeff Robinson talking with John Mejia of the ACLU of Utah. Finally, John, you mentioned this a little bit earlier. Why is this something that people ought to be concerned about, regardless of whether their politics are conservative or liberal, or regardless of their view of law enforcement and their protection of society?
You know, it really, and I don't want to sound, you know, too extreme here, but, you know, we are a free society. And, you know, things like readers, cell phone tracking, all these sort drones in the air that we may not be able to see and that, you know, we're concerned about those as well. You know, these sort of chip away at our freedom and our privacy because, you know, we should have this assumption that the government is not looking into our affairs without a good reason, without a warrant. And, you know, it does concern me that sort of we're getting sort of numb to this idea that information on us is being collected or that we're being watched. You know, our position is that we can be safe and free, and that, you know, when somebody says that they're collecting information on us or watching us to keep us safe, you know, I feel like our first reaction should be to push back on that.
This is Politics Up Close. My guest has been John Mejia, legal director of the ACLU of Utah, talking about the use of automatic license plate readers in Utah and across the state and the constitutional concerns raised by the technology. John, thank you very much for your time and for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with Peter Metcalf, CEO of Black Diamond Equipment, talking about public lands and environmental policy in Utah. This is Politics Up Close. I'm Jeff Robinson. This is Politics Up Close on KCPW. I'm Jeff Robinson. I'm with the Outdoor Retailers Summer Market in town at the Salt Palace. I'm sitting down now with Peter Metcalf, CEO of the Salt Lake-based Black Diamond Equipment here in downtown Salt Lake City. He and others in the outdoor industry are growing increasingly frustrated with the environmental and public lands policies of Utah leaders like Governor Gary Herbert, and it appears they're getting his attention. Peter, thanks for sitting down with us today.
Jeff, my pleasure. Thanks for your willingness to talk about these issues.
Peter, have you been frustrated with Utah's environmental policies for a long time now? And why do you think that now this seems to be getting more attention amongst outdoor leaders and in Utah's government?
Yeah, let me speak specifically to Utah's policies in regards to our public lands conservation in that regard. And specifically, we have been working with, and specifically myself, but the outdoor industry, with four administrations going back to Governor Leavitt, Governor Walker, Governor Huntsman, and now Governor Herbert, on issues related to our public lands, just their sustainability, their sanctity, their stewardship, because these lands are incredibly important to the vibrancy and the vitality of the outdoor industry, which, by all accounts, is one of Utah's most important economic sectors. And the governor has acknowledged that. We've shown data here of just how significant this industry is to the state. It's sustainable. It has been growing steadily for decades. It's a really important industry, and everybody has acknowledged that, except the one problem is that people will acknowledge that and pay lip service to it, but the policies that are being championed by our governor and by the majority of our congressional delegation, and I do not include Congressman Matheson in that, are really radical, they're right-wing, and they're very destructive to the sanctity, stewardship, and vibrancy of the public lands, which, if they go into effect, if they are adopted, will be so destructive to the state's outdoor economy, and they will set a horrific precedent nationally if these very radical policies get adopted.
And, Peter, you recently stepped down from a group called the Utah Ski and Snowboard Industry Working Group after a conflict with the governor. Tell me what happened there.
Yeah, it is. And just to be totally clear, it was the Utah Ski and Snowboard Manufacturers Working Group. And really what happened here is that the working group had sent by unanimous support a letter that I had penned with the unanimous support of the group, a letter to the governor and our congressional delegation telling them that we were very miffed and frustrated by the fact that we had not even been consulted prior to the Utah congressional delegation introducing legislation for ski link in Congress. And here it is, a industry sector where there is the governor's working group that has been put together with the idea that we were going to help influence and affect policies that were accretive to the success of this important economic sector in Utah, were not even consulted, and we were unanimously opposed to this because we thought it would be detrimental to the industry. That was not well received by anyone within the leadership, whether it would be the governor or our congressional delegation. That followed some back and forth communication, and later on I penned a op-ed piece for the Salt Lake Tribune, in which I respectfully challenge the governor and our congressional leadership relative to these very destructive policies that they were championing that I thought would be so detrimental for the future well-being of the state economically, for our quality of life, for the signature outdoor Utah experience, because I felt very strongly that on behalf of Black Diamond, on behalf of the outdoor industry, on behalf of the ski and snowboard manufacturers industry, and my fellow citizens, that somebody needed to speak up and say, these are very bad policies. They're radical, they're fringe, and they're very detrimental. The response I received from the governor on that was one of a bit of indignation, as well as a request of me that if I could not work with him, as he stated, in a collaborative manner, then I should seriously give thought to resigning from the working committee. After a couple of months' worth of thought, talking to my closest business confidants and my friends, I decided that I should take the governor up on that, that if he felt uncomfortable with me being on that working group and being involved in other working task force, which I had been involved with in the governor in the past, though I'd been working with four other governors, then I should do that, and I could become part of a respectful opposition group versus being considered part of a coalition that supported him, because neither I nor, as we're seeing, the majority of the Outdoor Industry Association are aligned with his nor the majority of our congressional delegation's policies here. They're very antithetical to the vibrancy of this industry, which is so dependent on the stewardship of our public lands.
We're speaking with Peter Metcalf, CEO of Black Diamond Equipment, with the outdoor retailer summer market in town. Peter, Governor Herbert bills himself as a pro-business governor. What case would you make as to how your business and others like it here in Utah are impacted by public lands policies such as this idea of seizing public lands from the federal government.
Yeah, so let's talk about specifically pro-business policies as they relate to the ski and snowboard manufacturers industry, the outdoor industry, and those industries that really are dependent upon the public lands. That's where our customers go to recreate. That's why they in part buy our equipment. And that is in part upon why great companies, whether they're Goldman Sachs or Adobe or the Black Diamonds or the Petzls or the Rossignols of the world, move to a place like Utah. There's many wonderful qualities to Utah, but its signature quality for knowledge worker-based companies and outdoor and ski-related companies is this access to well-stewarded, vibrant public lands. That includes the full spectrum, wildlands, wilderness lands, lands that are undeveloped, as well as lands that we have access to, our high-quality ski areas, etc. But when it comes down to working to protect the sanctity of our public lands, which are integral to the vibrancy of these industry sectors that I just talked about, the governor's policies and the policies of the majority of our congressional delegation, sans Matheson, are not pro-business. They're very, very detrimental to the long-term success of our businesses. And really, the policies that they need to champion are really inexpensive. They're free for all intents and purposes. You know, that's the amazing thing about these God-given iconic landscapes we have. We didn't pay anything for them. All we have to do is protect them, and we're going to have this amazing industry. We don't need to give them tax breaks. They're not asking for any political largesse. They're not asking for anything other than protect the God-given lands we have here, steward them, maintain the access to them, and we will have this very vibrant industry. And this industry grew up before any political officials knew we were even here. And it really was the 2004 protest that I led with the Outdoor Industry Association relative to some attacks by then Governor Leavitt on our federal lands that resulted in working groups, working dialogue, and a collaborative working relationship with Governor Leavitt, with Governor Worker, and of course, a strong working relationship with Governor Huntsman.
Now, Peter, this week the board of the Outdoor Industry Association, which puts on Outdoor Retailer, met with Governor Herbert. I know you weren't in that meeting, but what do you think, from what you're hearing and what your expectations are going to come of it, if anything? Do you have room for optimism or no?
Yeah, I do have room for guarded optimism here. In that meeting, as I understand it, as it was related to me by those in attendance, there was a reasonable exchange of ideas. I don't believe there was enough time for what I heard for a full exchange of ideas. However, the Outdoor Industry Association board and Frank Hugemeyer, its executive director, did issue a press release immediately thereafter in which I think the industry refound its voice that perhaps had been a little bit quiet over the past 12 to 18 months in regards to these issues. And I think stated it very clearly to our congressional delegation and the governor that these policies that were being championed here in Utah that I talked about a moment ago were really very dangerous and detrimental to the success of the outdoor industry. And the industry really had to think twice about not only having its show here, about having any kind of meaningful collaborative relationship with this governor, and that the governor really needed to articulate a vision to this industry and its board as to how he was going to be a champion of these issues that are so important to it, i.e., protecting the sanctity of our public lands. And I think there's going to be some more dialogue here on this and exactly what the industry is seeking from the governor over the coming days and weeks. So, I think the industry has, again, found a bit of its voice on these issues and is beginning to exert its leadership that had been a little bit quiet or dormant over the last 12 to 18 months, but more akin to the role it had been playing since 2004 and before that.
Now, the Outdoor Industry Association says the political climate of the host state is not the deciding factor, but it is a big factor. And certainly there are other issues like lack of space now at the Salt Palace and lack of hotel space and taxis. What would your reaction be if this show were to leave Salt Lake City?
I think that, I think Frank articulated it well, the CEO, in that The location for the show has got to work for a growing, vibrant show that is critical for the continued success of the industry. I would hope that would be Salt Lake. This is a wonderful venue from the perspective of the backdrop of the mountains that's so defined what this industry is about. It's wonderful from the perspective of a population of people who are gracious, warm, supportive, and I think really do champion these issues. And what has been so heartwarming for myself and the employees of Black Diamond and others in the industry who I've shared this with is that we have received such an outpouring of emails, of written letters, of phone calls, of verbal attaboys, not only from people within the industry, our customers, retailers, leading companies in the outdoor industries, leading companies in the ski industry, prominent non-outdoor industry companies in Utah have all come to us and said, attaboy, keep up that fight. We need the outdoor industry here championing these issues because our legislators, our congressional delegation, and our governor are so out of touch with mainstream Utah on these issues. So that is wonderful to have that, and that will be a deciding factor too. So I would like to see the show stay here, but it certainly will have to stay on the merits of does the logistics of the convention center, the hotel rooms, and everything else work? Because clearly right now, no one would want to make a decision to stay here over the politics. I mean, the politics and the negativity of the political leadership of the state in their policies towards this industry means that's a black eye against it. But the industry, I think, will make the decision based upon these other issues as well. Though it would be wonderful to know that, surprise, surprise, the policies being championed really are in line with the industry. I think that would be very helpful.
Peter, can I ask, is your company here in Utah to stay permanently?
You know, we made a huge commitment to relocate here 21 years ago from California. We've invested hugely in here. We have significantly over 300 direct workers, high-paid employees that grows every month. I know hundreds and hundreds of other jobs that are dependent upon us being here. We are committed to be staying here in this state. And just because we are here, we love being here. And I think it's important that we continue to be here, whether the trade show is here or not, and really be a force to champion these issues that has the support of the populace of so many other industries and companies. So we will stay here regardless.
This is Politics Up Close. I'm Jeff Robinson. My guest has been Peter Metcalf, CEO of the Salt Lake-based Black Diamond Equipment with the outdoor retailer's summer market in town. Peter, thank you very much.
Jeff, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Welcome back to Politics Up Close on KCBW. I'm Jeff Robinson. Not left, not right, forward is the campaign slogan of Donna McAleer. The Army veteran, businesswoman, and bobsled driver is the Democratic nominee this year in Utah's 1st Congressional District representing Northern Utah, challenging Republican incumbent Rob Bishop. She joins me now on the phone to discuss her campaign, her experience, and important issues like public lands policy and congressional reform. And Donna, thanks for being here. It's great to have you.
Jeff, it's great to be here. Thank you.
Listeners, join us on the air with your questions and comments for Donna McAleer, the Democratic nominee for Utah's 1st Congressional District. Our phone number is 801-355-TALK. That's 801-355-8255. Well, Donna, to start off, when and why did you decide to run for Congress this year?
The seed was planted in late November, kind of watered in December and January, and I made the decision in March. So I got into the race about 4 weeks before the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm running for three reasons. As a West Point graduate and an Army veteran, I took an oath to serve this country when I was 17, and that oath doesn't expire. And Congress needs leaders who are willing to look beyond partisanship and rigid ideology. And I believe that my West Point experience and the Army taught me that public service is about country and not politics. And I believe I bring a broad array of leadership experience across public and private sectors. I'm also running because, like so many Utahns and so many Americans, our Congress is stuck in gridlock, and we have delegations that promote obstructionism. And regardless of who the president is, the president needs an elected body with whom he can work. And that's why I pledge not left, not right, forward. I'm not an ideological thinker. I think about issues. I think about their impact on Utah and our citizens and on Americans.
And Donna, is this your first time then getting into politics, or have you been involved in politics before?
Yep, this is my first time. I think the only other time I ran for election was for class president, I think.
Have you identified, Donna, as a Democrat for a while now, or is that relatively new? And what is it about the party that you identify with exactly?
Well, I think like so many voters in this country and so many citizens, a two-party system doesn't really is not really where most of us are. We're somewhere in the middle. I am a fiscal conservative who is socially active that has a social conscience. I used to be a Republican. I was a registered Republican for a long time, and one of the reasons was because it was the only way you can vote in the primary in Utah.
Right.
However, I think both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, there are extreme thinkers in both parties. However, I think the Republican Party is certainly not the Republican Party I grew up in. And the Democratic Party is a bigger tent. It is more inclusive of a diversity of thought and experience and people and platforms. So my campaign is not about partisanship. It's about getting things done, and it's about leadership. I have no desire to be a career politician, Jeff. As you mentioned, I do believe in congressional reform, and I think it is one of the big things that is holding our country back. Our founding fathers never meant for politics to be the full-time profession of a few. They meant for a representative form of government, people from who are veterans, who are business leaders, who are not-for-profit leaders, who come from the medical profession, who are scientists and engineers and educators. That's where you get the diversity of thought, the discussion, the discourse, and the coming together in a solution. Right now in a two-party system with career politicians, everybody's trained to get the best for their side without compromising. I mean, so many of our leaders vote along the lines of party ideology 90-95% of the time. That's why we can't get anything done.
And Donna, you have a very interesting and diverse career, including the military and the business world. Start off by telling us a bit about your time in the Army and the experience that you gained there.
Well, I have always had a desire to serve this nation. I believe in its foundation. I believe in the right to vote. And I believe in its democratic principles. And my mother and her father escaped Hungary. They fled and crossed one of the last bridges across the Danube before it was blown up by the Soviets as they entered to supposedly liberate Hungary. So I feel I have a debt to this country. And I sought admission to West Point because it was the premier leadership institution in the country, and it would challenge me holistically, academically, intellectually, mentally, and physically, and prepare me to be an officer in the Army. And I can think of really no greater privilege than to lead our young people, men and women, who have raised their right hand in service to the nation. So I was a lieutenant, and I served in Würzburg, Germany, towards the end of the Cold War. So to see the impact of those who came before us, you know, our population of veterans has declined greatly. If you look back just two generations ago, you know, 6% of the population during World War II served in the military, and the other 94% were pretty much geared towards the war effort. You move forward just two generations, and less than 1% of the population is serving or has served. And, you know, most other people still really have no idea that we're a nation at war. And the second reason for running is we don't have many veterans in Congress, and Congress is the only body that can authorize war, and yet the last time that Congress authorized an act of war was in World War II, and we have other tools of national security policy. They're diplomatic and they're economic, and those should always be exhausted before we employ and deploy our military.
This is Politics Up Close. My guest is Donna McAleer, a candidate for Utah's 1st Congressional District. You can join us on the air, 801-355-TALK, 801-355-8255. Donna, tell us about how you became involved in the business world, the private sector, after leaving the military and your experiences there and how you think those would translate into Congress as well.
Well, as you talked about the military is about the mission. It's the mission that matters, and it doesn't matter what your background is or where you come from. Everybody comes together as a team. And I think if you take that and you couple it with my business background, I led a pretty significant global division for Genrad, which was a hardware technology company. And in business, you got to balance the budget. You got to produce a profit so that you can reinvest in the business, so that you can hire more people, and so that you can continue to grow. So the business leadership coupled with the military leadership is a great combination. We are facing a significant fiscal cliff here in the next couple of months if our elected leaders do not come together and make some decisions. Automatic budget cuts, particularly with regards to the military, which are known as sequestration, are not going to get us there, and frankly, they're going to harm the military. And I think we need, again, leaders who have these diverse experiences in the military, in business, who actually have to balance budgets and produce a profit, or who actually have to take care of soldiers and make sure that they're trained, make sure that they have the right resources, make sure that they're safe. These are the skills. This is leadership. Leadership is about accountability. It's about getting things done. It's about delegating. It's about bringing people together for the common good, not for selfishness.
Donna, let's get into some of the issues of this race and your campaign platform. One of them is education. You note on your website, of course, that Utah ranks last in per pupil funding, much room for improvement in Utah's public education system. But, of course, there's always controversy when the federal government gets involved in education. We've seen with No Child Left Behind and other laws. What do you think the role of Congress should be when it comes to improving Utah's public education system, and how would you work towards that effort?
Well, I think the role of the federal government in education is to provide models and guidelines and vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you look at the state, by 2020, two-thirds of our jobs in this state are going to be derived from, are going to need workers who have skills that you develop in early years in science, technology, engineering, and math, the problem solving, the critical reasoning, the ability to assimilate data and incomplete data, make decisions, creativity. So I think the federal government's role is to provide kind of the guidelines, but let the states implement a pathway to serve their people. The dilemma is, we talk about education, and we all say education is an investment in the future and an investment in our economy,
mm-hmm.
but as we continue to cut funding, we continue to increase class size, I think the actions significantly contradict those words. I volunteer in my daughter's third grade class, and, you know, a couple times a week, maybe I'm working with four or five students in, you know, a period of an hour. I don't know how a teacher can effectively get to 27, 30 students in a class every day, particularly when students have different learning styles, they come from different backgrounds, they may be at different levels. So the answer isn't just to keep cutting money and putting more students in class. It's to make teachers part of the solution. Let's get their ideas. We see in Utah, one of the things Utah's doing really, really well is the implementation of dual immersion. This is critical for global competitiveness. So I think the federal government could act as a kind of clearinghouse for things that are working well in different parts of the country. We have to be competitive locally, but we also have to be competitive globally. This is a global economy that we are in.
Donna, let's also talk about the issue of public lands, something that your opponent, Congressman Rob Bishop, certainly has been involved in, and he's supportive of this effort we see here in Utah now to seize control of public lands from the federal government. What are your priorities when it comes to the stewardship of Utah's public lands, and what would your priorities be in Washington?
Well, my priorities are to protect that access to that public land. This is one of Utah's great natural resources. Not only Utah's great natural resources, but those around the United States. When you think of our national park system and what was created under Teddy Roosevelt for this generation and future generations, you know, we have tourists that come from all over the world to Utah and to the United States to go to our national parks. It's huge tourism for our state and our economy.
Mm-hmm.
In Utah, we also are home to so many outdoor retailers. As you know, the Outdoor Retail Association show is going on right now.
Right.
And we've attracted these companies here because of our iconic wilderness, because of their ability to walk out their headquarters and be in their own lab. This is an industry that's about creativity and innovation and technology and getting outside. And when we look at that industry, nationwide, it's about $646 billion. In the state of Utah, it's $5.8 billion, and 65,000 jobs come from that industry. Now, those are incredible economic benefits. We're not even talking about the collateral benefits of the health benefits, the preventative benefits when people get outside and they're in the great outdoors and they're exercising. And how about the educational benefits? Every time I take my daughter hiking or mountain biking and we're seeing animals or we're seeing different geography, I mean, it's pretty stunning. So one of my priorities is to protect that and understand what an incredible resource it is, and that we need industries like the outdoor retail industry that creates a sustainable economy. You continue to camp. People continue to fish and hunt. People continue to be in the outdoors. And we've certainly seen in times of recession, people tend to stay closer to home. They don't travel as much. So we've got huge opportunities here, but we need to protect these lands for our future. The selling of public lands, first of all, trying to acquire the public lands, our own state legislative attorneys have said it is unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So it is ludicrous to me that our state legislature and our state and federal delegation continue to promote the suing of the federal government for these public lands. Utah disclaimed the right to those public lands as a condition of statehood. Let's move forward. Let's focus our energy and, frankly, our taxpayer dollars on creating a sustainable economy, not trying to sue the federal government so that we can sell and privatize these lands for individual or corporate profit. You know, people don't even think about, a lot of our legislators say this is how they want to fund education.
Uh-huh.
But how are we going to mitigate fires? How are we going to manage the land? You know, the federal government does some things pretty poorly, but one thing they do well is the management of federal land, and there's huge costs to them. We can't in Utah even afford to keep some of our own state parks open. So I don't think the selling of federal lands is the answer to our economic or educational challenges.
Donna, we have just about a minute left here, so I want to ask you really quickly about the campaign itself. How could you beat Congressman Rob Bishop, a Republican who's been in office for 4 or 5 terms now? How would you be able to win this election?
By people getting out and voting, by people understanding that they have a choice. Over the last, 10 years, Congressman Bishop has been a career politician. He served 10 years in the state legislature, 10 years in the federal legislature. If people want to change, they need to get out. They need to exercise their right to vote. In my mind, voting is not an option. It's a duty. And we're going to bring new leadership to Utah and to Washington, D.C. coming November. In Utah, it's a challenge because we have the 49th worst voting records in the country. The only state worse than us is the country of Texas, and people don't feel that their vote counts. Well, your vote most certainly does, and particularly at the federal level and the state house races and those school board races, some of those races are going to be decided by a couple hundred votes. The president, congressional races may be decided by a few thousand. So it's important that people get out and vote. We're going to show people, I mean, I've got a proven record of results in the military, in business, and not-for-profit. I mean, so many of these things that I'm promoting, Jeff, I actually do. I mean, I ran a healthcare not-for-profit that provided access to healthcare for people without insurance. I mean, I believe in the protection of public lands. I'm a ski instructor, and I love being outside and playing in our incredible wilderness here.
Donna, unfortunately, we'll have to leave it at that. Donna McAleer is a candidate for Utah's 1st Congressional District. Donna, thank you so much for your time and for joining us.
Thanks, Jeff. I really appreciate it. Have a great one.
Politics Up Close is a production of KCBW News. Download podcasts of our interviews online at kcbw.org. I'm Jeff Robinson. Thanks for joining us.